Shalom Chaverim. Baruch haba lechol mekshevim. This is Dr. Duff Forbes, Rabbi Kehilat HaMashiach, Betoch Yisrael. Welcome, my friends, to this program entitled Treasures from Tanakh. My dear friends, the great Hillel uttered words of the deepest content when he said, "He who does not learn forfeits his life." If that amiable giant, Gargantua, were to inscribe those words upon a gargantuan parchment roll 40 years long, and bid Pharaoh hold it at one end in Egypt, and Joshua hold it at the other end in Canaan, it would be an apt epitaph to stretch across that theatre of scene and circumstance which marked Israel's exodus from Egypt, and subsequent 40 years' futility in the wilderness, as recorded in the book of Numbers and reviewed in the first 11 chapters of Deuteronomy. In my last message, I gave you a bird's-eye view of the whole book of Deuteronomy, and we were able to classify its contents into three major groups, which we named successively the historical group, the legislative group, and the prophetical group. It is from the first of these groupings that I hope to provide spiritual treasure on this occasion. Let us be assured that there is a definite and required nexus between all five books of Torah. Bereshit, Genesis, speaks of election. Shmot, Exodus, speaks of redemption. Vayikra, Leviticus, speaks of communion. Bamidbar, Numbers, speaks of direction. Devarim, Deuteronomy, speaks of destination. Devarim, Deuteronomy, is thus the anticipated and required completion of Chumash, the five books, the Pentateuch. True, he who does not learn forfeits his life. The generation that came out of Egypt didn't learn, so they died. Now, this new generation, with Moses, must learn, or they too will die. Only Caleb, Joshua, and Moses were of the old generation which came up out of Egypt. These three had learnt and lived. It is an act of benevolence, as well as the discharge of a responsibility, that Moses performs when he makes a review of Israel's history for the benefit of the new generation upon whose shoulders lies the task of the conquest of Canaan. Franz Werfel has packed into one powerful phrase the dire drama of fallen man's experience from Eden until today, when he declares, "Death is frozen time. Time is molten death." Whilst this vivid phrase loses most of its magnitude when measured against a man whose life is directed by God, it is nevertheless adequate commentary upon Israel's wilderness experience. 40 years of time frozen by death. Now, lest the time then future to the new generation should be but molten death, Moses, the mouthpiece of God, recounts Israel's call and reviews Israel's conduct. Grasp equally the staggering facts and their stupendous lesson. About 40 years earlier, a vast concourse of people had been divinely granted law and light, and had set out under divine escort on an 11 days' journey to destination Eretz. Now, about 40 years later, only 3 of that old generation remain, and destination Eretz is still unaccomplished, in spite of law and light. Why the failure? Was the light inadequate? Nay, it was brilliant. Was the law imperfect? Emphatically not. Hear the psalmist on this point. Torat Adonai tamimah meshivat nafesh. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. Well, since there was no fault with the law, or with the light? Was it the Lord with whom the fault lay? Was the Lord impotent? What? After Egypt and the Red Sea? Why then, I repeat, the failure? The deficiency, my friends, was neither in the light, the law, nor the Lord. The deficiency was obviously in Israel himself, and equally obviously, but less admitted, in fallen human nature as a whole. Psalm 78 is an enlightening and moving commentary on the failure of Israel and the faithfulness of God during a period which includes the section of Israel's history reviewed by Moses. The psalmist, speaking of the strength and wonderful works of God, continues, "For he established a testimony in Jacob, and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that they may put their confidence in God, and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments." Then, with unreserved frankness, that old generation is described by the psalmist as follows, "A stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright, and whose spirit was not steadfast with God." Like a skillful physician, the psalmist makes an accurate diagnosis when he discloses the character of Israel's spiritual malady in these words, "Ki lo he'aminu be'Elohim, v'lo batachu b'shuato," because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. My friends, the discerning among us will have already grasped the fact that this is a basic diagnosis. It uncovers the spiritual cancer not only of that particular generation of Israel, but of all humanity. Believing not in the God revealed in the Holy Scriptures, and trusting not in the salvation unveiled in those same holy oracles, is the malignant malady menacing mankind. We would be most unwise if we failed to profit from this divine diagnosis of a deadly spiritual disease from which none of us is immune, unless and until we allow ourselves to be inoculated against the malady with the precious serum of truth provided in and through the Holy Scriptures. Hillel is right in this regard, at least, for he who does not learn forfeits his life. I am struck with the amazing harmony between the psalmist's diagnosis of disease and Moses' discourse on the Decalogue. Reviewing the drama of Israel's failure from the negative standpoint, the psalmist pinpoints the problem in a twin indictment. First, they believed not God. The word is Elohim. Secondly, they trusted not in the salvation provided by him. The word is Yeshua. Reviewing the drama of Israel's failure from the positive standpoint, Moses pinpoints the prospects in a twin inducement, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. And the second, Va'ahavta et Adonai Eloheicha v'chol levavacha uv'chol nefshecha uv'chol miyodeicha. Let me translate literally Moses' positive twin inducements and then throw them over against the psalmist's negative twin indictments for a profitable comparison. The first factor is objective and involves the being of God. The second factor is subjective and involves the belief in God. As touching the being of God, the psalmist uses a plural noun, Elohim, literally gods. They believed not gods. Yet, to safeguard against the perils of polytheism, the idea of many gods, the plural noun is qualified by the pronoun in the first person singular masculine, his salvation, not their salvation. Similarly, Moses uses the noun in the plural, Eloheinu, literally our gods. Hear, O Israel, Jehovah our gods. Yet, to safeguard against the perils of polytheism, the plural noun is qualified by the declaration of God's unity. This is an illustration of some of the means whereby the holy oracles consistently retard the rashness of Unitarianism on the one hand and polytheism on the other hand. I enter into this fascinating subject in much greater detail in my book, Out of the Clouds. Turning now from the objective factor of the being of God to the subjective factor of belief, the psalmist says negatively, they trusted not, whilst Moses enjoins positively that we shall love God. Now love is the very womb in which trust is born. If we truly love, we truly trust. If we are truly loved, the love we receive is truly trustworthy. In whom and in what did that generation neither believe nor trust? Why neither in the God of Revelation nor in the salvation he offered? It is interesting that the Hebrew word used by the psalmist relative to the salvation provided by God is Yeshua. This word is also the name of one declared by those same holy oracles to be God's salvation provided by God. To which shall we give heed? To holy oracles or to human opinions? Surely he who does not learn forfeits his life. Yivarecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, Yair Adonai p'nav elecha v'hunecha, Yisar Adonai p'nav elecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Amen.